From Cafe and the Vox Media Podcast Network, this is a special edition of Cafe Insider. I'm Preet Bharara.
And I'm Joyce Vance.
How are you, Joyce? It's unusual that we gather on a Monday, but we got late-breaking news late Friday afternoon at long last. Former Trump advisor Steve Bannon, indicted by the Justice Department, will be prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney in the District of Columbia on two counts of criminal contempt of Congress. And I thought we should maybe spend a few minutes quickly talking about our takeaways, what we think will happen next, whether other people will be indicted and arrested. What's your reaction to the news on Friday?
I mean, really? Do you think that this is important enough that we should do a special emergency chat?
Well, I'm in Chicago. I'm at a conference in Chicago, sitting in my hotel room with a portable mic, making the time. And you're in your home studio, right?
I am. I'm actually, I have the Rittenhouse closing arguments up on my monitor screen. But like you, I think that Bannon is so important.
Focus on Bannon. So
yeah, that it's more than worth everyone taking a moment to understand what's happening here, and perhaps as importantly, what isn't happening here.
So it's the first time that there's been a criminal indictment for contempt of Congress in 38 years. The last time was in 1983. The Garland Justice Department took 22 days. I probably was agitating for it to happen more quickly than some others. You were admonishing people to be patient. It's not complicated. The one thing that I think is interesting is you and I joked that it need only be a two-page indictment. It's about 9 pages. But much of that is just reciting the request and reciting the nature of the interests of the special committee, the 1-6 committee. Anything surprising?
You know, I don't think anything about this is surprising. I think that this is what we expected, that DOJ would engage in due diligence in evaluating Bannon's potential defenses. He has a couple, right? Advice of counsel and executive privilege come to mind. And that they would then go ahead and indict, which they did do. The one thing, and I'll just flag this early on, I didn't anticipate this, but it makes complete sense now that I look at it, is that there are two separate counts, one for his failure to testify and one for his failure to turn over documents. I think that that's entirely appropriate. And whether we can read tea leaves into that about the possibility of indicting other defendants, I think is sort of an interesting question.
I think it's interesting also. Always better if you can have two counts rather than one, because you go to a trial at some point, people can get hung up on something with respect to one aspect of his non-cooperation or another aspect, might as well break them out. But people should also know that on each count, he faces up to a year in prison. It's a misdemeanor, so no more than a year, but a mandatory minimum of a month. So if he gets convicted, between 1 and 12 months, I've heard some people say that he's facing up to 2 years in prison because I guess technically you can get 12 months on each count. Do you agree with me?
No,
that will never happen. That would be grouped. And
yeah,
even if he gets convicted on both counts with respect to documents and testimony, max he's going to do is a year, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Do you think this has an effect on Bannon in terms of it changing his mind, or does he want to be a martyr like everyone says?
So I'm in that later camp, and I wrote a piece for cafe.com probably right when this all began to happen, suggesting that one of the real risks here is that Bannon would embrace that sort of cloak of martyrdom and use it to rile up Trump's base. I think that it's very likely that that will happen and that it will be important that there's good messaging around that. Maybe not directly from DOJ, but important for people to understand, for instance, on the Sunday shows this weekend, some of the Republican talking heads weighed in and said, well, Bannon is being prosecuted for his beliefs and his speech, and that's un-American. And of course, that's not what's happening here.
It's also non-speech.
I mean, he's being prosecuted. DOJ says it best in the indictment. They say he did not comply with the subpoena in any way. He failed to comply with the dictates of law that any other citizen, including you and me, would have to, and he was appropriately indicted for it.
You know, you make a very important point on this, and I think it's worth elaborating on it. He didn't comply in any way. So we have a lot of witnesses, and then we'll talk about what's going to happen in the future with respect to these other witnesses. There are ways to comply, at least some, right? Jeffrey Clark, former high-level DOJ official, at least came in, invoked his privilege, you know, whatever the merits of them are, but invoked it in front of the committee, showed respect to them, to the committee, came to see the panel face to face. Bannon, I think you pointed this out in a tweet. There's multiple things he didn't do. It's not just that he blew off the subpoena. It's not just that he's not giving testimony or not giving documents. He's not answering basic questions like, has he conducted a search for documents? Or normally, If you think there's some documents over which a privilege applies, then you have to set forth what's called a privilege log, and basically a chart of the documents you have without revealing the content of the documents, but what the nature of the document is and what privilege you're asserting and generally why. And he's not done any of those things. So my question to you is, of all the people who are in the crosshairs of the committee, some of whom are complying, some of whom are not complying at all, is Steve Bannon likely to ultimately be the most indictable one? And what do we think about the other people?
Steve Bannon is always the most indictable one. It doesn't really matter what the situation is. But look here, I mean, I think this is the reason that DOJ takes so much longer, writes so many more pages in this indictment than you and I thought was necessary. It's because they're laying out the committee's rules and the process. And there's something that's pretty interesting in here when it gets down to Bannon's testimony and the fact that he failed to show up. The process, which isn't that different from a civil deposition, requires him to show up, to assert the privilege to each question individually, right? If he's asked his name, the response is not privileged. He has to say his name.
It is definitely not privileged.
But if they get into questions where he wants to assert a privilege, he has to do that. And then what happens is that a ruling is made by whoever the designated official in the House is. And if that official disallows the privilege, Bannon has to go ahead and answer. He can challenge that down the road in court and ask that it be excluded, sort of akin to what you would do in a civil deposition, but he still has to answer. I think that that holds interesting implications for some of these other witnesses who have shown up. And for instance, we don't really know exactly what went on with Mark Meadows. I read something that indicated he didn't show up at all on Zoom. There was some other indication that he may have been there briefly. But the committee will have to decide in referring these witnesses to DOJ for prosecution precisely what they think the violation of the subpoena was. And then DOJ will have to evaluate whether it's serious enough to be like Bannon or whether it's not something that they're willing to move forward on.
I wonder what you think of the critics of DOJ and whether they will be quieter now because they think Merrick Garland wasn't being tough enough and it was taking a long time to indict Steve Bannon. And to the extent people are, you know, happy or satisfied that the rule of law is prevailing and Bannon has been charged, I also, on the other hand, wonder if people are getting their expectations raised too high. I mean, in no universe, do you agree with me, is every single witness, and there are dozens of them, every single witness who does not fully comply is not going to be arrested and charged with criminal contempt of Congress. How many will? I mean, it's hard to predict, and this is an impossible question, so I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Magic but
but some of these other folks have a little bit more argument to make. I think ultimately, Mark Meadows and some others may be in the crosshairs of a criminal indictment as well. But remember, Bannon wasn't even working in the executive branch at the time of January 6th. And some of these other folks were. Some of these folks were working in the government and were lawyers and might have a plausible argument of attorney-client privilege. I think, again, a lot of this stuff falls outside that. We can talk about that in the future at some point, that if they were conspiring to commit a crime or to overturn the election, which, you know, maybe constitutes a crime, you can't get an attorney-client privilege to cover that. But at least as far as making a colorable argument of some kind of privilege as to some material, some of those folks will be able to do it, and they won't get prosecuted, or will they?
I think the key here is that people should have moderate expectations because, as you say, not all of these people are going to be prosecuted. I doubt that any of them will be arrested on misdemeanor charges absent some really unusual behavior. So some of these witnesses will have very sophisticated lawyers who will be very careful, I think, about their compliance with the subpoena. Steve Bannon, I believe, is represented by the same lawyer who represented then-President Trump in the second go-round of impeachment. So people can make of that what they will, and whether that played into the way that he really flouted the subpoena in the way that made him susceptible of prosecution. Even more important than thinking about witnesses in front of Congress is I hope people won't transfer this to believing that DOJ is about to file major indictments against Trump's inner circle over January 6th. I don't think this prosecution of Bannon has any predictive value for those substantive charges.
No, I mean, part of what the committee is trying to do is get that evidence together, which, by the way, that evidence, those documents, depending on how the process unfolds, can be used in any future prosecution against those people. Do you think that Mark Meadows is next on the dock? I think I saw the chairman, Benny Thompson, or someone else on the committee say that they're very seriously contemplating making a referral of him too. Remember, that takes a vote in the committee and then a vote of the full House before it goes to DOJ. Is he the next guy up?
I think Adam Schiff was pretty clear over the weekend as well that they would be voting on him. So he will be the next referral. I think it's very hard, at least for me, to weigh in on this without knowing exactly what Meadows' engagement with the committee was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did he turn over any documents? Did he send in a privilege log? Did he show up to assert the privilege to testimony? It might even be enough if his lawyer did some of that on his behalf. So I'm going to just decline to weigh in on that until we know more.
You know, there are ways to at least show some respect and some compliance that may not be satisfactory to the committee, but may save you from being indicted. And I think my favorite line, did you ever watch Veep?
Yes. Oh my God. It was our favorite show. We miss it so much.
And I've been thinking about it the last couple of days, and there's some scandal that erupts with respect to the vice president played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus on Veep. And she says in front of the public, he says, I want to make full disclosure. I'm paraphrasing here. And then she goes into her office. And then when she has her inner circle with her and closes the door, and she says, and by the way, of course, by full disclosure, what I mean is partial disclosure, light.
Yes.
And I think what some of these folks are doing, to borrow from the musings of Julia Louis-Dreyfus on that show, is partial disclosure, light. And Steve Bannon was no disclosure. That's just a great show of bad faith. And some of these people, as you say, are more sophisticated and will try to go somewhere. I mean, maybe Jeffrey Clark was doing that. He didn't just say, I'm staying home. He did show up. He did assert some privileges. He did answer some questions. He was there for more than 5 minutes, right?
He is. But can we just sort of put a pin in this one? Because again, we don't know all the details. I had read reporting that Clark asserted the attorney-client privilege, and I'm sort of perplexed by that, because if he was saying he was Trump's attorney in the campaign capacity, he was violating many of his professional obligations at DOJ. If he's saying that he was representing Trump in his capacity as president, he was again violating many of his obligations at DOJ. So if that's in fact the source of his objection to the subpoena, attorney-client privilege, I think he's got some bigger fish to fry there.
He's got some splaining to do.
But that said, at least he showed up.
He did. Now, for Bannon himself, we're recording this at around 12:30 p.m. Monday Eastern time. I saw footage of Bannon arriving at the courthouse. He was allowed to surrender himself. I think when he walked by cameras, he plugged his podcast. Remind me next time I'm arrested to also plug our podcast.
God forbid.
By the time people listen to this, he will probably have been presented and arraigned. Every expectation is that he will get bail. I don't think a judge will find that he presents a danger to the community other than to the Republic generally. And some arguments could be made about a risk of flight. But I think in a case like this, it's a misdemeanor charge under a year in prison. Bail will be set. And I think then there's discovery. He'll make a motion to dismiss. And we'll see where that goes. And then there'll be a trial. And I don't think it'll take that long to get to trial. And for the same reason that it only took 22 days to indict, I think it should only be a few short months to a trial, and that trial can get wrapped up before the midterm elections. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's 70 days on the Speedy Trial Act, right? So that's when...
Yeah, nobody goes to trial in 70 days.
Oh my God, we do in my district.
Not in the Southern District.
So, but what I was going to say is, in a case like this that's not complicated, there's not a lot of reason to drag it out. I think what Bannon will do here is they'll file motions. And of course, that pushes your Speedy Trial Act time back, because time while motions is pending is typically excludable. If I was Bannon's lawyer, I would try to raise executive privilege or reliance of counsel pretrial. And then I would actually try to take some form of interlocutory appeal before the trial took place if the court ruled
against
me.
You're using a fancy word, Joyce, interlocutory. That just means that before the final judgment.
Exactly.
In the case.
It's sort of a way that a party can say, this issue is so important that the appellate court needs to decide it before the trial happens. And it's not at all clear here whether that would be successful or not. It sort of depends on what issues are raised and how they're postured. So I would always bet on this crew to do anything that they can to delay, But I think that you're right. And if this judge is running a tight courtroom, then this case goes to trial rapidly. And trial takes what? 1-2 days at most?
Does not take long at all.
I mean, it's like the morning and they're
done.
The
only complicated issue is the legal one, which will be addressed on the motion to dismiss about whether there is or is not privilege. That's not going to be a function. Or maybe, I don't know. I guess his lawyers could figure out a way to try to make that an important issue in the trial. But the bottom line is, because some people have been curious about this, none of this forces Bannon to testify. Like, we don't strap him down if he loses the trial and administer sodium pentothal and make him answer questions. It is a device to incentivize someone to change their mind and answer questions. But at the end of the day, I don't think we'll ever get testimony from him. I think he'll get convicted ultimately, although you never know. And he'll go to jail for between 1 and 12 months. And he will be the martyr that he wants to be. And the committee hopefully will be able to get as much information from other sources and from third parties that might include his documents as well to be able to make sense of what happened on January 6th. And Steve Bannon, by the way, final point that I'll make, please remember that there is another potentially pending indictment against Steve Bannon in connection with the thing that he got pardoned for in the Southern District, that fraud relating to the organization that was supposed to build a wall on the southern border that the Southern District alleged he and three other people defrauded the public about. He was pardoned for that by President Trump, but the Manhattan DA's office, it looks like they're looking at that as well. So I would expect a third indictment against Steve Bannon before too long as well.
I think that's right. And so there's an interesting question here, right? How much tolerance does Steve Bannon have for spending time behind bars? One of the reasons that seems likely for Trump's pardon in the first place in the federal case over Build the Wall wasn't that Trump had such enormous love for Bannon. It was that he didn't want Bannon to get into a situation where Bannon might tell the truth and testify against him. Whether there's any vitality to those concerns and whether they might come into play here, we'll just have to wait and see.
And you know who I'm going to ask a lot of these questions to?
Who are you going to ask?
Adam Schiff, this Thursday. This Thursday, live at Cooper Union. You can find the link in the show notes. If you can come, it's free. If not, you'll hear the interview on the Stay Tuned podcast next week.
I can't wait.
Oh, and by the way, since I'm away and I will be in flight during the time we normally tape, you're doing something special tomorrow.
I am. I'm going to sit down and have a long conversation with Roger McNamee. Roger was one of the early investors in Facebook. He gave Mark Zuckerberg a lot of advice on how Facebook should be run early on. And at some point, they had a parting of the ways over the direction that Facebook should take. So I'm looking forward to bringing that very interesting and timely conversation to our listeners.
That's great. So always send us your questions to letters@cafe.com. And Joyce and I will be back together, although not physically together, but back together next week on Tuesday at the same usual time.
We look forward to answering your questions.
Thanks for doing this special, Joyce.
Good to talk with you, Preet. That was better than therapy, actually.
That's it for this week. Cafe Insider is presented by Cafe Studios and the Vox Media Podcast Network. Your hosts are Preet Bharara and Joyce Vance. The executive producer is Tamara Sepper. The technical director is David Tatasciore. The senior producers are Adam Waller and Matthew Billy. And the Cafe team is David Curlander, Sam Ozer-Staten, Noah Azulai, Nat Wiener, Jake Kaplan, Chris Boylan, Sean Walsh, Chelsea Simmons, and Namita Shah. Our music is by Andrew Doss. Thank you for being a part of the Cafe Insider community.